Today's show brought to you in part by our friends from Cut. Cut, the new way to bet sports, social betting, it's called. You match bets with a friend, you make challenges, you can find a bet that's been challenged publicly. You only pay 3% commission, as good of a deal going when it comes to sports betting. And you can get some free money on us. Use the promo code ITM24 for a 10% deposit bonus. You can get up to 100 that way, deposit 1,000. Boom, you're starting at 1,100 and only betting into essentially what is a 3% takeout. Very, very good situation. I'm going to be doing a bunch when it comes to baseball. There's going to be some baseball season-long props on there. But you know what I might do is put my money where my mouth is as a Mets fan. I don't think the Mets are going to be as bad as people think. And I think that their prices are just going to be right this year. I might do an open Mets challenge on Cut. So any day you want to bet against the Mets, come and do it against me. I'm probably doing you a big favor here. Come and do it against me on the Cut app. Get it from the App Store, K-U-T-T. Make sure to use that promo code ITM24. Welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Tuesday, March 19th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you, but not in the Brooklyn Bunker, pretty far from there, actually. I'm basically coming to you from a railway arch in Bermondsey in England, where I'm going to be for the next couple weeks, coming off a really fun week at Cheltenham. Got a lot of nice feedback on the shows we did with Sean Clancy from out there. Hopefully some folks were able to make a little bit of money on that, and most importantly, have a bunch of fun. Only problem with Cheltenham is it always means these days, last 2 years anyway, that I've had to miss the NHC. I was paying attention to what was going on out in Vegas. That's where we're going to start the show today, talking about that. And we will bring in a man who also likes to go out there but missed it this year. Little things like work getting in the way for him. You read his work all the time at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. He's Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
Doing great, Pete. Very much looking forward to recapping a little bit with you. And Jonathan and I filled in for you last week on the Players Podcast. Had a good time chatting about some races. So, yeah, we're able to handle things in your absence while you're off in the old country.
In the spirit of no good deed goes unpunished, I may ask you to help me out with that again this week. We'll see. I am going to be looking at the races, and when I'm looking at them, I feel obligated to be on, but there is a little bit of running around. So production meeting in the middle of the show, might you be available to appear with me or instead of me late week this week? What's your schedule looking like?
Certain as the sun rises in the east.
Excellent. Well, let's start with the NHC. Obviously with the time difference, I wasn't able to be fully tuned into the Steve Bick coverage, but it sure seems from everybody I talk to like that is the preferred way of following along, obviously with just the typical leaderboard watching. But Steve has done such a great job over the years, really bringing that event to people who can't be there, and did a fantastic job from everything I'm hearing, covering it from pillar to post. In the end, it was a name that was familiar to me, but I'd never met him. Mike Gillum got the win, collected $800,000 for his first place finish, and avid reader of the DRF. And he had quite a roller coaster, the old U-shaped pattern, you might say, in terms of how his tournament went. In fifth place after day one, with two races to go on day two, he was in 81st on the outside looking in. Somehow managed to make it back, not just to make the cut, but to advance all the way up to the final table. In my years following it, Nick, I don't remember a journey like that to get there. We've seen the meteoric rise on day two, but not exactly the way that that Gillum produced it. But, you know, dyed in the wool horse player, very excited to see him become the 25th ever winner of the NHC. Have you had any dealings with him at all? What do you know about our winner?
Yeah, I learned after the fact, I was just telling you this off air, that he played blackjack with Marshall and Philly Joe and I last year in the at Horseshoe. So, and I do remember meeting Mike then. He finished 31st last year in 2023. Wow. And got $16,700. And yeah, I mean, this is kind of, he is sort of the now poster child for nobody's out of it on day three, because he came into day three in 64th at $180. And, you know, because this was a pretty packed together final table, I don't have any historical data on it, but I mean, we were a little over $34 from first to 10th going into the final table. So there was obviously going to be more of an opportunity for movement than we've generally seen at the final table in the past. I mean, there have been some years where the final table was just essentially everyone going through the motions. And I remember the Ray Arsenault year and the Paul Matisse year, for example, nobody moved at all. But Mike ended up coming from seventh going into the final table, eighth, excuse me, going into the final table to win. And, you know, to put things in perspective, Pete, he got $140 during the quote unquote Silver Sunday portion of things. David Harrison won the Silver Sunday contest with $128.50. So this was a pretty damn incredible run for Mike, who, you know, came from way in the back to get the job done. So very, very pleased to see that happen. You know, I was looking through his plays and the $73 or so that he got in the Silver Sunday portion of it. And, you know, he just kind of chipped away. He kept chopping wood. It was not any big score. He had an $18 score. He had a $15.60 score. He had some 480s. He had a 340. You know, he was just putting numbers on the board. And I think the moral of the story there is that on those Sunday cards, and Steve had Duke and Paul Matisse on a little late in his coverage on Sunday, and they talked about how, for lack of a better way to put it, I mean, a lot of racing, especially on a Sunday early on, is very uncompetitive. It's all of these cards are backloaded. They're all geared towards pick sixes, pick fives, things like that. So, you know, Gulfstream will run a number of their 6 and 7 horse fields early. So will Tampa, so will Aqueduct, especially this time of year. Duke was saying the best racing that morning was really at Laurel. And so, you know, that obviously that inhibited a lot of people from making a big move. But, you know, I think Mike obviously went in with a really good strategy and did so with a lot of success. And he wanted to just take horses that he could find a way to move his way up the leaderboard and get the job done. The eventual second place finisher, Seth Morris, who came into day three with the lead, he scored 231 on day two after the leaderboard. After day two, he was on top by about $26. He only put up $17 in the early portion of Sunday. So, I mean, he had no opportunity to kind of extend away from everybody else. And I think that kind of packed everything together. He also continued to do what he did all weekend in some of those late races. And he took price horses the whole way. He did not deviate from his plan. I remember the first final table race was a race at Laurel. He took a 14-1 shot that looked like the horse was closing well up the inside, ended up finishing second. I mean, this thing was about to be say goodnight if that 14-1 wins. So, yeah. So you sort of live by the sword, you die by the sword. And you know, I'm guessing he's probably a Dan Campbell fan because, you know, Dan Campbell was much mocked for his aggressive approach in the divisional playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody who knew Dan Campbell. Yeah, and everybody who knew Dan Campbell said, you know, Dan Campbell's been doing this all year. So he tried to do exactly what he did all weekend in order to get the win. And unfortunately, he ended up second. As I rant about all of this, I will say that I wanted to give a particular acknowledgement to the third place finisher, Matt Blanchett, who regularly sat about three tables in front of my late father and I in the Jockey Club at Sam Houston, qualified through a free qualifier. It was his first NHC ever and finished third and went home with $200,000. So pretty incredible story there. Matt is going to join me on Sharpie Time at Sam Houston on Friday night. And I'm going to try and have the TV guys tape it so we can put it on YouTube since none of you can watch it, basically. But yeah, so I'll talk to Matt a little bit about his NHC experience and handicap the card. And he's a younger guy that's at the track all the time and is involved a little bit in some horse ownership as well. So yeah, a lot of good stories there and a lot of names that we've seen on the leaderboard. As I mentioned, David Harrison, who of course won the NHC a couple of years ago, won the Silver Sunday contest by about $20. So it looked like a lot of fun. They changed the format a little bit, went to a heavier Saturday, lighter Friday schedule, also introduced Turfway, which according to everybody I heard, everybody liked the changes quite a bit. So it looks like once again, the players committee came up with some things that worked, and it seemed like it played out well.
I'm very curious what they do about next year. Usually they announce what they're doing at the awards benefit, but if they did that this year, I didn't hear it. Have you heard when the 2025 version of the event will be?
I thought they released the schedule for the next like few years. Yeah, it's going to be the same weekend.
Oh.
So they have it March 14th to 16th, 2025, 13th to 15th, 2026. Oh, so I think you're Cheltenhamed up.
Maybe one year. Maybe, I mean, you know, I have a lot of work that I can do over here, and it's, you know, there's other ancillary reasons to come over, but I don't know that I can just miss the NHC indefinitely. I may have to move some things around to get there for one of them. But yeah, lots of mid-major track love. You mentioned about the third place finisher and getting the with the Sam Houston ties, and our winner Mike Gillum, a Horseshoe Indy person. So good to see those places being represented for sure. Do you have the top 10 in front of you? We should at least read out the names, I think.
I do. The top 10 was Mike Gillum at $320.10. Seth Morris was second at $310.28. Matt Blanchett third at $289.22. We see some of these, of course, odd dollar amounts because of the no breakage in Kentucky. Yep. First time we've ever seen that. Lawrence Calden was fourth, $284.56. Dan Kaplan was fifth, $278.48. Rob Henney was sixth, $269.34. Nicholas Shirilla was seventh, $267.20. TJ Sondi, who was the Friday leader, $263.30. GT Nixon, contest veteran, $257.36. And Scott Cavalieri was 10th at $256.72. Morris got a BCBC spot for his day two score. His day two score was $231.38. Pretty incredible. Carl Broberg was second on the second day and got $5,000. On the first day, TJ Sondi was first and got a BCBC spot. And our own Marshall Graham was second and got $5,000 for that. And interestingly, Mike Gillum was fifth on the first day and ended up coming back, and Blanchett was fourth. So these guys had really good Fridays and sort of ho-hum Saturdays. Gillum more so than Blanchett. Blanchett was in the top 10 going into Sunday, but he was seventh. Whereas Mike Gillum only put up $43 on Saturday. But, you know, if he knew he had the club in his back to put up $140 on Sunday, it worked out fine.
No complaints at this stage of the game. Dan Kaplan, that's an interesting name up there. A former, if I'm correct about this, and I think I am, Horse Player World Series winner not too long ago, probably almost 10 years now, but a name that I've definitely seen on a lot of leaderboards and a lot of contest veterans who we've seen in our Horse Player Happy Hour games and just, you know, on various leaderboards here, there, and everywhere. Very cool stuff out of the NHC. Speaking of our friend Marshall, were you in touch with him during it at all? What was he? What I'm sure, you know, he had a final table appearance before. It looked like history might repeat itself. Was there any story, or did the wheels just kind of come off for him?
You know, he had that huge day Friday, and I actually talked to Jim Goodman a little bit Sunday morning, and he mentioned that I think of Marshall's first 10 plays, he had eight of them cash, first or second. So, I mean, he was just red hot coming out of the gate. He had an 18-1 shot at Aqueduct on both entries. Hit the skids a little bit on Saturday, which is obviously very easy to do, and ended up, you know, coming into a spot where he was obviously not as close as he would have liked to have been going into the day in second. I believe he was 31st and 65th coming into Sunday, put in a little bit of a rally, but came up short of the final table. And I believe overall checked in 31st, I want to say was the number for Marshall. So he ends up collecting, 29th. So $15,000 for that. And then he was also 69th. So he gets about $25,000 on that, $5,000 for the activities on Friday, finishing second. So, yeah, two caches there, which I think is the first time he had done that. But he was a final table participant back in 2019. So, yeah, undoubtedly a good weekend, and, you know, joins a not particularly a gigantic list of people who have been in the top 10 in the Breeders' Cup and also the top 10 of the NHC. He actually was already on that list, but now he's cashed in the NHC a couple of times as Great. Opposed to just once. So, yeah, big achievement there, and undoubtedly one of the better contest players out there, one of the bigger horse owners out there, and just in general a tremendous person. So was definitely rooting for Marshall, and he seemed to have had a very good weekend in that respect. It's also pretty easy to forget that, you know, especially for people out there that have never played in this thing, and I can assure you, it's virtually impossible. I mean, it is incredibly difficult. In fact, there was a funny conversation on Bick's coverage where Steve asked Duke Matisse, who of course finished fourth when his brother won back in 2016, maybe. I can't remember, 16 or 17.
I want to say 16.
Yeah, I think 16. And Steve asked Duke, you know, how he handles looking at races. And Duke said, I look at every race. He said, the only track that I might not take much of a look at, especially in early races, is Golden Gate. And Chris Larmy was on at the same time. And Chris, who's an NHC Hall of Famer and of course, has played in it a number of times, said, wow, I can't believe you look at every race. And I don't want to speak for Duke. He certainly can speak for himself. And I know my reaction was, I mean, well, hell, I mean, anytime I've played in this damn thing, I've looked at every race too. You know, I just didn't, I was afraid of not doing it, right? I was afraid of not looking. And I mean, Chris has cashed in the NHC five times. So he certainly knows what he's doing, but that speaks to it, right? So last year I had $43 on Friday and $157 on Saturday and ended up getting into, I think I was in 27th, 28th, something like that, going into Sunday and goose egged, right? And so here it was. I had a very ho-hum day on Friday. I had an excellent day on Saturday and just a total shit show on Sunday. And that's just, you know, that's how it goes, right? It's a super, super hard contest and one where, you know, I don't see how these guys like AJ Benton that are just tremendously prepared and put in months and months of work, my hat's off to them, because it is so difficult to be ready for that thing and to feel fully prepared and to get yourself in a position to be successful. So big credit to everybody who was able to take home a paycheck of any type. Now, worth noting that anybody who did win money, this is the first NHC ever where they did not leave with the money, because there's going to be an audit period afterwards, given some of the shenanigans that went on last year. So things that actually deserved a disqualification and a ban.
Yes.
So those people will get their money a little bit later on down the road. But yeah, the calendar's coming up, and I think the best way to wrap up this NHC recap is for me to bring up that you can qualify for the NHC at Sam Houston on Saturday, April 6th in our Houston Betting Challenge, which I keep calling challenge. I believe it's actually championship. One of those two words. We're going to give out two spots. Something with a chub. Right. We're going to give out two spots, including a BCBC spot. First time ever a contest in Texas has yielded a BCBC spot. $2,000 live bankroll entry fee. You have to bet $1,000 on Sam Houston. You can bet the other $1,000 on any combination of races at Sam Houston, Aqueduct, Keeneland, Oaklawn, and Santa Anita during our contest period, which is going to be about 1 until roughly 5:30, depending on whether we run 9 or 10. And more information for that on shrp.com. Great weekend to be at Sam Houston. We'll have a nice place for everybody to sit so they can take in simulcast racing and live racing. And unfortunately, most of you don't realize it, but our live racing has actually been very good. And it's very competitive this time of year too, with Delta and Fairgrounds both being over. So make your way on down to H-Town. We'll have a little hospitality for everybody on Friday night at the track. So really looking forward to having some contest players down once again after we had a tremendously successful NHC qualifier back in January.
I love that all those prizes are added at no cost to players. That makes it a phenomenal deal. And one other note I'll make, now that the NHC is in the rear view, I think you're going to start seeing more people focused and entering this. There is a limit to the number of entries that can be given in this contest, so don't delay. Get involved today. Is it shrp.com the best place to go to get the info, Nick?
Yes, sir. shrp.com. Get the info there. Go ahead and register, and we'll plan on seeing you in a couple of weeks.
We just have another minute, Nick. Just curious to talk to you about the racing from the weekend, if anything stood out to you. I was thrilled to see I was thrilled to see the Golden Vron, the Chosen Vron, get back among the winners out at Santa Anita. Just such a cool horse, and another big league buyer speed figure, a 101 from that one in the San Carlos. Was there anything that stood out to you anywhere in terms of what was going on the track as opposed to at the windows out there in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I think he was kind of the star of the weekend. He ran very, very well in winning the San Carlos. And, you know, a Calbred, who's obviously capable of being in the open company level, has won a grade one as well. So I think you can expect him to sort of dominate the West Coast sprint division. And you know, Pete, we've got to probably open the door to the possibility that with it being a Del Mar Breeders' Cup, I mean, this horse is not out of the realm of possibility for a Breeders' Cup win. The sprint ranks have thinned out quite a bit. There's no more Elite Power. There's no more Gunite. And the three-year-old sprint horses last year were not anything special. So it's going to be very interesting to see where he fits amongst that group, because I think he might have more of a – might be closer to the head of the table than on the sides this time around.
That's, I would say, other
horses I wanted to mention just from the weekend. It was a big comeback weekend for Bill Mott's barn. Scylla ran on Sunday. She is the daughter of Close Hatches, that had looked sensational in two wins last year, one at Keeneland, one at Churchill. She came back from a long layoff and actually lost on Sunday to Beth's Dream by a nose, battling it out all the way down the stretch. She got a 93 buyer speed figure in what was probably a better race than people thought, simply because she lost. And nowadays, I mean, horses just are not allowed to have the audacity to lose. But I think she's going to be a nice filly and mare, or nice filly in that division, going on later in the year. And Arthur's Ride came back with a very impressive one other than win. He was a colt who broke his maiden last year and beat Dreamlike. He also had the misfortune as a two-year-old of running into Disarm and Instant Coffee. Right. And Jonathan and I talked about him a little bit on the Players Pod on Friday and how we thought he was pretty close to a single in the Coast to Coast Pick 5. I found a way to lose the Coast to Coast Pick 5 anyway, but which is par. So, but anyway, he looked really good. He got a 99 buyer speed figure, and he feels like a horse that is destined for some big races in the maybe the mid-range, mile-ish type races throughout the year for Bill Mott.
Great stuff, Nick. We appreciate you, and the show will continue right now. But first, want to just thank you one more time for all your help today.
Anytime, my friend.
Today's show also brought to you by the Florida Derby Challenge. Florida Derby Day rapidly approaching, and our friends at First/ExpressBet have a big tournament that day. $1,500 buy-in, $1,000 bankroll, $500 is the entry fee. 100% of the entry fees are going to be paid out as prizes in the form of Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats, NHC seats, and Kentucky Derby Challenge seats, as well as cash. The Florida Derby Challenge, you can also feed your way into it through a series of contests over on ExpressBet. To learn more, go to expressbet.com/tournaments.
Next up on the show, we bring in a returning guest I always love to speak with. We've got a really cool collaboration coming up in the form of what is essentially a free contest over the weekend. You do have to pay $5, but it goes to charity. So I guess I shouldn't call it free. But anyway, it's a tremendous value contest. You're going to have the opportunity to win a paid-for share of your own racehorse. We're going to talk about that horse. We're going to talk about the contest. We're going to talk about some new news coming out of his stable, Adelphi Racing Club. He is Matt Kater. Matt, how are things?
Everything's good, Pete. I'm getting ready to travel like you. Not quite going to be away for as long as you, but still, traveling's always something you got to prepare for nonetheless.
Let's start there, because the trip you're referring to is a trip over to Dubai, because, you know, and you gave, I didn't actually ask you this question. I heard you being interviewed. I can't remember by whom, but your answers were so great and so political after Pandagate's last impressive win about what the plans were. And you made no bones about whose decision it was. And that was the trainer, Christophe Clement, and his team over there. But, you know, there was a question. Their last win was so impressive. Would you think about trying to accrue some Derby points with this horse? And the answer, an emphatic yes. Tell me from your perspective how this all came about.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, there's kind of two parts to that, right? So after we won the Gander, you know, first and foremost, you know, when you have a trainer like Christophe Clement training your horse, you're going to defer to him in terms of what the right spot for the horse is. I mean, I think, you know, as evidenced by the success that Pandagate had in the Gander, you know, he's a genius at, you know, knowing when to, you know, back off of a horse and give them some time into a race, knowing when to, you know, put your foot on the accelerator and, you know, get a little bit more ambitious and push. You know, we had had a beautiful debut with him in October, and then we had a rough trip at Laurel in a race that we weren't really pointing to, but we ended up in. And, you know, he decided after that to give the horse a little bit of time down in Payson, you know, some nice warmth and sun for the New York bred, and, you know, point him to the Gander and really have him primed to run big there. And he sure was right in terms of everything he did to get the horse to that spot, and the horse ran great. And, you know, so it, just a good example of why you trust your trainer, and especially someone like Christoph. So, you know, without a doubt, you know, when we were thinking about, okay, what are the next spots, you know, we're ultimately going to defer to his better judgment with that. And then, you know, the second part of it too is, you know, to be candid, we had really only pointed to the Gander at that point. You know, as a New York bred, newly turned 3-year-old, that was, you know, essentially the target. You know, of course, we were dreaming maybe down the line there are races like the Albany and New York Derby and things like that for a horse that is a 3-year-old New York bred male that wants to go long on the dirt. But, you know, essentially the long-term target for us since he broke his maiden was really the Gander anyway. And so, you know, once he ran in the Gander and he won it so impressively, we really didn't know where we were going to go with him. And, you know, we had to kind of take a step back and, you know, think about the options, think about what was best for the horse, and then also just sort of see how the horse came out of the race. And so, you know, while I was being, I guess, a little bit political in my response on the Fox show after the race, you know, it kind of came out of a little bit out of left field that we were going to be considering, you know, the kind of spots that we're considering, because we had been so laser focused on just trying to win that, you know, sort of first long major New York bred stake.
It'll be interesting. I mean, Forever Young has a lot of Derby hype on him. I'm personally not sure how to rate that last effort in Saudi. I think this will be the real litmus test. I mean, I know I'm asking you, and you're bringing your bias to the party in the way that you answer this question, but what's your best guess on how Pandagate's going to stand up form-wise to a horse like Forever Young?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a pretty big believer in Forever Young being a nice horse. You know, I think, you know, some of the figures that I saw out of that last race, you know, when you compare them to what happened in the Saudi Cup, you know, that was a very fast race. And he obviously had, you know, a decent body of work leading into that. And, you know, I just saw the latest Kentucky Derby futures odds close. And, you know, he's, you know, I think 12-1 in that, you know, ahead of some really nice horses, including another nice horse for the Clements, Deterministic, who I think was like 16-1 at the end of that. So, you know, he's obviously very well backed by the bettors. He's, you know, proven on the track. And, you know, if you believe the figures from, you know, the Saudi races, he's very, very fast. And, you know, he didn't have the best of trips that day either. So I think he's very clearly the horse to beat in the UAE Derby. But I think, you know, what Christoph saw and what I'm excited about is, you know, they still have to go out there and they got to run their race. And I'm not quite sure that beyond him, the UAE Derby is maybe as deep as it has been in the last couple of years. And I'm not sure that the Japanese outside of Forever Young are quite as good as the horses that ran last year. I think they went 1-2-3 last year. And I do know that our horse is doing very, very well right now out of the race. He worked well the other day, and he'll ship today. We're obviously recording this on Tuesday to Dubai. And, you know, I think he'll appreciate the distance of the race. He's just a long striding son of Arrogate. He's 17 plus hands, big, big boy who wants to, you know, go all day. And, you know, that long race there will obviously suit him. And there's a long stretch at play as well. So I think, you know, there's every opportunity for him to, you know, hit the board in this kind of race. And, you know, if he takes a step forward, why can't he compete with Forever Young? And you know, you can't be afraid of running against one horse, in my opinion, you know, when you're pointing to a race like this.
Have you been to Dubai before, or is this a maiden voyage?
No, so ironically, I've gone once, and I went as a fan, and it was for Arrogate's Dubai.
Oh, wow, that's funny.
Yeah, so ironic to be going back with the, you know, a son of Arrogate for the first time running or racing. That's pretty cool. And I still say to, you know, everyone that I talk to, the Arrogate performance at the Dubai World Cup was the best performance I've ever seen live in my life.
Yep.
Now I'm only 39, but you know, I've seen a lot of races live, and that was pretty darn good. And I'm saying that, Pete, because I turn 40 next week. So I'm just trying to get in the 30s. I can still say I'm in the 30s for another week. So.
I'm glad we got you a chance to say that on air.
Yeah, there you go.
But oh, that's a great thrill. Yeah, I mean, if you can get a little like father, like son, maybe not so much at the start of the race, but maybe that run through the stretch can be emulated by him, and we'll really have something exciting to talk about the next time you come on air. Let's tell the people, Matt, about this way to get involved in Adelphi that won't cost them. I keep saying that. It will cost you a dime. It will cost you $5 that will be donated to Thoroughbred Horses of Saratoga, Kim Weir's new organization. But this was an idea we sort of cooked up together to have this opportunity to win a share in a racehorse. And we're going to do it in a two-stage contest. Stage one happens on horseturnies.com. If you go there now, you can sign up for the game. We'll have the races a little bit later in the week. I'll probably try to mirror at least a little bit what the regular schedule of Horse Tourneys races is, so people will feel free to just jump in and then have a chance here. What you have to do in this first leg, this first contest essentially, is the top eight. We're calling it the Echo Town Eight because Echo Town is the sire of the horse in question. And then those eight are going to compete the following Saturday in what I will describe as the World Horse Player Tour Final Table format. Now, for folks who don't remember, I'm not going to get into all the details on this show right now. Obviously, you'll have all the info you need and more ahead of time. But if you go find our World Horse Player Tour pilot on YouTube, this was a new format JK and I came up with that we felt like leveled the playing field between people who have, you know, the money to compete at the highest levels in live bankroll tournaments and people who love racing and have the skill to do the game theory to compete there, but don't have the money to risk. So basically it's a live bankroll, but it's a fixed cost and it's mythical money, kind of like the World Series of Poker. It's going to be really fun. So all you have to do out of this Saturday's contest is finish in the top eight. And then, you know, obviously we'll get you all the details about how the final table is going to work, but we'll give away prizes to everybody in the top eight. We got to figure out what those are. You know, certainly there'll be opportunities to get involved in, you know, in the Money Plus subscriptions, couple hundred dollar value, things like that. You'd mentioned maybe we'll do some sort of a VIP tour at Saratoga, something like that. That could be really cool. But what I want you to tell people about is this horse and, you know, specifically your interest in trying to help me run a contest like this and a little bit about the horse, who's obviously a special horse, if you want to put this idea forward to help fill out his ownership group.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've been a part owner of a few of our horses up until this point. And obviously, you know, when you got involved with this horse, one of the things that I had, you know, thought about for a long time is it would be fun to, you know, let some of your fans from the In the Money Media family, you know, have a chance to get involved and own a horse with you and with us. And, you know, so to me, that just seemed like a natural fit. And obviously creating a handicapping contest to figure out, you know, who gets to do that, you just given, you know, what you guys do day in and day out, seemed to make the most sense. So I was excited about, you know, that idea when you brought it to me. And look, I think this horse is a really interesting one. These are the kinds of like sneaky horses that end up being, you know, really, really fun horses in the stable. You know, quick backstory on this horse is, you know, we had kind of gone through the bulk of the yearling buying season, you know, starting at Saratoga and the New York Bred Sale there, and then going to, you know, Keeneland in September. And, you know, for the most part, I thought we were kind of done buying yearlings. And, you know, we you know, didn't really have plans to buy anymore. And our bloodstock agent, Joe Migliori, who bought Pandygate and Funny Hal, a lot of our other, you know, successful racehorses, was going down to the Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale in Maryland for another client. And I said, look, if you find something that kind of fits what we look for, let me know. And there were two horses that he brought to our attention. And this was the one that was kind of at the top of his list. And it just checked a lot of the boxes of interest for us. You know, definitely a value play. We bought this horse for $50,000, which, you know, is good, obviously, for the partners that have gotten involved with him in terms of like an entry level price, but also good from the standpoint of flexibility when it comes to racing. He's a New York bred, so he's eligible for the New York bred maiden races, but, you know, having been purchased for $50,000 or less, he's also eligible for those lucrative maiden auction races that they write in New York and Kentucky and some other places as well. So that was, you know, certainly a key aspect of this. You know, he's by an unproven sire in Echo Town, whose first crop are two-year-olds now. I actually saw a bunch of them down at the OBS March sale last week, and a lot of them made our list. I think he could be a sneaky sort of precocious dirt sprint influence type sire. And, you know, we like those types, and this horse looked very early and precocious to us. The family has been, you know, very precocious. You know, the dam won three times, including on debut. She's a daughter of Into Mischief. This is her first foal. Her second dam was super productive, having thrown nine winners, including stakes winner and Flattery Will Get You, who was third on debut, but then won her next two starts, just sort of adding to that precocity and several other horses that were either stakes placed or, you know, six-figure plus earners. And, you know, the dam by Into Mischief, Trouble for Skylar, the mom of this horse, you know, earned over $160,000 at the races as well. So, you know, very sort of blue-collar, New York-bred type family in terms of, you know, a couple of stakes performers, but just a lot of, you know, sort of lunch pail type horses that go out there and get the job done and win, you know, a lot of races and earn good money. But married to, you know, the upside potential of a freshman sire who could, you know, end up doing, you know, a lot, from a sire perspective. And then, you know, out of a dam being the first foal by a dam by, you know, the champion sire Into Mischief, you know, there was just a lot of elements there that were interesting, you know, to us. So I think this is just a, you know, kind of a really fun action type horse is the best way that I would describe it. You know, with all the New York bred conditions and options and whatnot. And we ended up deciding to send this horse to John Terranova. And that was kind of a cool connection for us as well. I started owning horses with Sovereign Stables with Matt and Mike Gatzis about 20 years ago. And they had a partnership at the time called Sovereign Stables. And a lot of the partners that we have in Adelphi, or at least a good number of them, you know, we're with Sovereign back in the day and, had a bunch of horses with John Terranova through Sovereign. And so, you know, been trying to find a horse that fit John and Tanya's program. And this horse, I think, fits it well. And so I just think it's going to be a really fun partnership. It's a good group of people and obviously having you involved and, having whoever wins this involved from the In the Money Media family will be a nice sort of cherry on top of the partnership, from that standpoint.
InTheMoneyPodcast.com/contest. That will give you a direct link to the page where you can sign up on Horse Journeys. Once again, $5 to compete. That money is going to get donated straight to Thoroughbred Aftercare. We figured we would raise a little bit of extra money. And, you know, why are we doing that? Also, it was interesting. I was having some conversations with McKay Smith over at Horse Journeys, and I think he made a good point that there's certain people out there who will just sign up for anything free, but then like that's it. And they'll seek out things that are free. They're not necessarily part of like your community. We figure the small barrier to entry, the $5, ensures that this is going to be people, you know, we want this to be people, we're happy to have anybody, but we really want this to be people who are like a little bit invested, who are gonna, you know, want to learn more about the Adelphi partnership, learn more about the In the Money Media Network. And we thought having this small, you know, stipend almost, or whatever you want to call it, was a good way to ensure that we get the best possible group competing. We don't just want 700 randos, you know, we like the idea, you know, like Adelphi Racing Club. You chose that name for a reason, Matt. And you know, we want to try to do things for like-minded people who kind of look at the world the same way. And I do think that's one of the things that separates your business from a lot of other racing partnerships. We wanted to extend that idea to this contest. Am I on to something with that assumption that word was chosen carefully?
No, for sure. I mean, you know, this is about, you know, when you own racehorses, you've got to be in it to enjoy it, and you got to be in it to enjoy it with the other people that you're owning those horses with. You know, if you don't enjoy, you know, the whole process, right, from acquiring the horse to seeing the horse grow up and pre-train and get into training and, you know, the ups and downs and the starts and stops, like horse racing ownership is not for the faint of heart. So you got to be in it for the right reason. And it's the camaraderie with the people that you own horses with a lot of times that makes it what it is. You know, beyond all the other beautiful aspects of it, you know, they're phenomenal animals and whatnot. And, you know, so we definitely were invested when we started Adelphi in trying to bring the right group of people together. And then, I mean, look, candidly, aftercare is an incredibly important thing. And, you know, regardless of whether we're owning horses, betting on horses, you know, watching them on television, training them, whatever it is, you know, we've got to do our part to make sure that they've got, you know, quality lives and careers after, you know, the racing is over. And that's always been a really important part of what we've done with Adelphi. I mean, I've got a three-stall horse barn in my backyard. We've got retired racehorses there, you know, and awesome. We donate and, you know, do all that stuff. And, you know, so one of the things that's important, you know, to me about, you know, finding like-minded people is certainly finding people that will put a value on, you know, supporting the horse post their racing career. And, you know, look, this is a small little thing that we can do within this, you know, overall fun, which should be an overall fun contest of just, you know, charging a really small nominal amount, like you said, to kind of weed out, you know, some people that maybe don't necessarily fit, but at the same time, you know, $5 times however many people sign up for this will do a lot of good. And, you know, we certainly support that in every way we can.
It'll buy some hay at the very least. We'll be making a contribution. Kim Weir's been on these airwaves many times and has made it very clear that every little bit counts when it comes to this stuff. I want to hear more about the horses in the backyard. Somehow I didn't realize that you did that. Who you got back there?
So it's funny, actually. I've got it's a little three-stall barn, and my wife and I and my son, who's almost 11, he actually turns 11 tomorrow. We take care of the horses ourselves, and it's a fun cathartic thing. And I've got actually right now, and the horses will sometimes rotate in and out. You know, we'll you know bring them in, and then you know they'll find second careers and go to a nice home or things like that. But the three horses we have right now are one retired racehorse, a filly by the name of Morality Claus, who was a multiple time winner for us, ran in New York and some other circuits. She's a 6 year old now. She's a sweetheart of a mare. And then we have a retired NYPD mounted unit horse named Broadway. Cool. And we have a retired equine therapy horse who's a quarter horse by breed, but worked for an equine therapy association up in Bedford, New York. And, you know, I think he's 23 now and, you know, was ready to kind of move on and retire and just eat grass every day. And so, you know, he keeps my my lawn mowing bills down. That's for sure.
Your kid is probably pretty excited about that. No, you don't have to worry about pushing the mower when you've got the horse to do the
yeah, he gets off easy with the paddock. Yeah. it's funny though. It's an interesting dynamic right now because we basically have the two old men, you know, 20 plus year old geldings, the retired NYPD horse and the retired equine therapy horse, and they would just be happy to go out every day and eat grass from, you know, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and come in and sleep at night and do the same thing the next day, you know, as long as the weather's good or whatever. And then we've got, you know, the 6 year old mare, retired racehorse, who's got some spunk and some energy, who wants to run around and play with those older geldings. And sometimes it creates quite the dynamic.
Must be pretty entertaining to see it in action. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/contest. That's where you go to enter this thing. We want to get you involved. We appreciate you, Matt, coming on, and hopefully we're going to have a lot more to talk about soon. I know we will, in terms of everything going on with Adelphi and this contest as well, as we get to see who will be in the Echo Town 8. Matt, we'll have you back on very soon.
That sounds great. I appreciate it, Pete.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I would like to thank today's guests, Matt Kater and Nick Tamaro, for joining us. Really enjoyed catching up with them. We'll point you to the YouTube channel as well. We've got new YouTube videos dropping this week. Go over there and check those out.
And of course, we'll be back later in the week with more great racing action as we preview what's going to be a really fun weekend of racing in the U.S. Fairgrounds and the Louisiana Derby at the very top of the list. Let's thank our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing. You know how we always love to root for the purple and black around here. Big run from Marshall out at the NHC there last weekend. We were all rooting for him as well. Also, you've heard us talk about Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga before. What a great way to support them by playing in our free contest. Go and check that out in themoneypodcast.com/contest to see what we've got cooking with our Echo Town 8 contest. See if you can be one of the Echo Town 8 by participating in a $5 contest that gets the proceeds donated to charity on this coming Saturday. Sure to be a ton of fun there. And to learn more about the work that Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga do, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. Most of all, though, want to thank all of you for listening, making these shows so much fun to do. Keep it locked at inthemoneypodcast.com for loads of free racing information, tips, and analysis. We'll be back soon. I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. May you win all your photos.